the guys from Ping, they've kind of shown me how much the equipment matters.
I just love that I can hit any shot I kind of want.
We're going to be able to tell some fun stories about what goes on here to help golfers play better golf.
Welcome back to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast. I'm Shane Bacon. That's Marty Jurtson. Marty, we've got a special guest. We've been having some special guests lately. This is always a bonus. Paul Wood, the VP of Engineering, is here to talk about what I would say is one of the coolest subjects we have hit on, Marty. I know this is a big thing that Ping has been involved in, adaptive fitting and just trying to fit every golfer in the world. And Paul, I was reading through the different types of adaptive fittings that Ping offers, and I can only imagine this is a list that continually gets updated. Players in wheelchairs, assistive carts, amputees, stroke survivors, seniors, blind golfers, little people, and even in one case, the tallest person in Britain. Paul, I'm going to start with you. How did you build that list at Ping, and how often is that list updated to expand the offerings that the company has?
Great question. The answer, Shane, is one by one. I mean, how this started was getting questions from our customer service team. Hey, can we help someone who's a seated golfer? We don't really have any guidelines on how to fit this guy. So as kind of one of our resident innovation guys, they would send that call down to me and I would say, oh, I'll try and figure it out. And I'm not the designer that Marty ever was. I'm not a particularly mechanical person, but I would go find who can help me help this person. And then we would, okay, great. Now we know how to fit this guy. And the next one would come up and the next one would come up. And it's just been a really fun project to try to build up. And you nailed it from the start. Like, how do we fit anybody on the planet? If you want to play golf, we love the game. We think it's a great game. And there's no reason why almost anyone can't play. And that's been the philosophy. So like one of the very, very first people we fit in, I think it was 2006, 2007. Marty, I think, would remember this too. I get an email from our customer service team and it's a guy called Jeff Lewis. He lives in Arizona. And I remember it distinctly because it's like a 3-line email. He said, hey, my name's Jeff. I used to play golf and then I've had this illness and I'm a quadruple amputee now. I don't have any arms and I don't have any legs and I would like to play golf again. Can you help me? And I was like, I have no idea. How are you going to grip the club? Can you come in and see us and we'll try to figure it out? And so a week later, he comes in and we get a bunch of our engineers and interns and we brainstorm and we figure out how to get this guy gripping a golf club. And that's how it's been. A lot of trial and error and things that have gone terribly wrong and then things that go a bit right the next time. And Jeff's still playing now, 15 years later. He won his local competition a couple of years ago and got accused of being a sandbagger, which was the best thing ever.
Good thing to be accused of. Marty, you and I have talked so much on this podcast about fitting golfers to the clubs that fit who they are as a golfer. This is taking that to an amazing level. What has it been like to see adaptive fitting become a thing that Ping not just is involved in, but kind of leads the category in for the company and for the golfers that you guys are meeting and fitting?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all the individual stories like Jeff that Paul talked about have made such a huge difference to us. And I love what Paul has helped lead us down this path that, you know, one by one, we figure out how to fit and build very unique product for a certain type of adaptive needs. And then, you know, we've built up this fitting kit, which is tools that we have at a select number of accounts around the country so that more and more folks can get access to that, because not everyone can come here and do all that hands-on experience here at the Proving Ground. So that's been very fun. I think to learn to rethink what the fitting process looks like as well. And, you know, I think Paul describes it very well that when you're fitting an adaptive golfer, you're really doing things in reverse. You're figuring out, like Paul said with Jeff, how does the golfer going to grip the club? That's the first thing you do. And normally in our fitting process, you get everything dialed in. Okay. You know, then the grip is the last thing you do. Right. So it's flipping that in reverse. And that's been very healthy for us as engineers to be able to think differently. Like Paul talked about.
Paul, I know this is something you're very passionate about. And I know it's been a big part of your last few years. this would be easy to just say no to. I mean, you get an email and you're thinking about the time and the effort and the building process. It'd be very easy to go, no, unfortunately, we don't offer this. How did you go about making this a priority at Ping?
It's been a real slow burn. You know, I mentioned, I think 2006, 2007, doing the first couple of bits and pieces. And the way we made it work in the first few years was because it was 5% of my time. You know, it's not a huge amount of my time, but when someone calls in, I could, okay, yeah, I can work with you. I've got a little bit of time. We'll figure it out. And as Marty said, we created that fitting bag that covers 99% of cases. You know, someone who's needs a very long club, a very short club, or they're playing from a chair where they need a very flat club. We had those options, but it was little bits. You know, if you just work on something, just, you know, a couple of hours a week over 10 years, it starts to add up. And we've been very lucky. We're a family company. The Solheim family have always said to me, go for it. Like, if you want to work on this and you've got, as long as you're getting everything else done, like, you go for it. But just in the last few years, we've started to see more momentum and more people realizing, yeah, okay, I can play golf from a seated position. I can swing one-handed. I can play with these exotic paddles that help me grip a club when I didn't think I could grip a club. And suddenly now the demand has grown, and now we make it work. We have a full-time adaptive fitter called Brian, and it's amazing. It's a full-time job for someone to keep up with the demand we've created. And that's just great to see. Because I think this, you know, the latest stat I saw was there's 60 million people in America who live with a disability of some kind, like 1 in 5 people in America. And golf is an amazing sport, you know, because you can take your time, we can adapt the clubs to you. There's a lot of things going for it in terms of you can play from a seated position. Like, a lot of sports, you just couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So it lends itself well to, we can figure this out. We just have to show people. You just have to, you know, look, you can play this game with a 65-inch driver, which is super cool to see, and an amazing skill. And so that's how it's been, you know, little and often, and now we have a full-time fitter. It's great.
Marty, you've mentioned the fitting process. Paul said, you know, 99% of cases are kind of handled with this bag or fitting that you guys have now. Can you walk me through what that entails, what that looks like? Because I was reading through the website, and you guys have mentioned paddles and long drivers, short drivers. What does an adaptive fitting kit look like on y'all's side of things?
I think, again, maybe starting with the different grip designs first, and then expanding on what exactly the bag looks like. And then maybe, Paul, a few good examples of fun builds we've done with that over the years.
Yeah, that sounds great. So I'm sure I'll miss a couple of things. But broadly speaking, the idea is we have a bag that's kind of an add-on pack. So if someone's already a Ping fitter and they have the basic tools, they have the kind of 9-degree head, they have the standard length, you know, regular flex, stiff flex. So we're trying to add in the extra things that would help. And so on the grip side, you know, often oversized grips can be very helpful. If someone has a weak grip or they're swinging one-handed, going to something light and big can be good. We've actually used putter grips. So we, you know, in the rules of golf, a grip has to be symmetrical, but if you have a medical need, you can kind of go outside that a little bit. So we could put a PP60 putter grip on a full swing club, and we've done that many times. We have these paddles, this sort of very big paddle that can actually go right next to someone's armpit, and they can use that to kind of grip the club and swing around their body, which is, you know, very bespoke, but it works for golfers who have very short limbs and maybe are struggling to grip the club elsewhere. We have very long and very short shafts, so just expanding our normal range. You know, a normal fitting bag might have plus an inch and a half to minus an inch. We have plus 12 inches to minus 15 inches, that kind of thing. And similar with things like lie angle, where often in a fitting, you're dialing in a lie angle by 1 or 2 degrees. In an adaptive fitting, you might be dialing in the lie angle plus 8 degrees or minus 8 degrees. So a lot of that, you know, and going very light, a lot of lightweight stuff. So we'll do things like we'll take a head and we'll take the back weight out completely. You know, it's not optimizing the head for moment of inertia, but it's sure optimizing the club head if you're swinging one-handed. So that's a flavor of what's in the bag.
And some cool stories that you've had in terms of fitting over the years for certain people with needs.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of examples. I've got too many to mention, but Andreas Brandenberger is a player who came to us with a condition called phocomelia that he was born with, where his arms are not fully formed. So he has shorter arms kind of that end before the elbow and a couple of fingers on each arm. And so for him, he needed something very, very long and some way to grip the club. And he was actually the inventor of the paddle. I mentioned I'm not the mechanical guy. He basically did the hard work of imagining what that would need to look like for him to swing. And we helped him realize that. And his set, his driver is 66 inches long with this huge paddle, all the way down to his putter, I think, is 58 inches long. And it's amazing. The thing that sticks with me that he said was, it's one of the few things in his life that adapted to him. He spent his whole life adapting to the world. You know, the world was not built with him in mind in terms of how ergonomics are. This is one of the few things that was adapted to him, which is what we're trying to do in custom fitting for everyone, right? We're trying to fit the golf club to you, not fit you to the golf club. So he's just a great example of that. We've had some real fun with, say, partially sighted golfers, where we've people who can just about see an outline of a club, but not enough to be able to see, is that a 7-iron or an 8-iron? So we've taken clubs and like painted the whole head a particular color. And I think they look amazing. This set of G irons where the 7-iron is bright blue, the 8-iron is green, the 9-iron is yellow. The simple stuff didn't change the performance, but now for a mostly blind golfer, they can look in the bag and see exactly what they've got. We did a set recently for a shorter stature golfer. I think he's between 4 and 5 feet tall, and everything in his bag is between 5 and 10 inches short of our standard. It's not that difficult to build. You just have to really know what you're doing in terms of how do you build up the grip. You know, a lot of wraps of tape under the grip and being careful with weight and things like that. And that's where we can leverage our engineering knowledge. It's fun for us because it's a great engineering challenge, as well as being just a really fun thing to help people play their best.
Paul, I can only assume that this has to be the most rewarding part of your job and your time at Ping, getting to see people that come to you and say things like, you know, you guys have adapted golf clubs to me, you know, as you were speaking of, you know, somebody that's had to live a life of always having to adapt themselves elsewhere. How has that been like for you personally and for your team to get to see people come to you and go, I want to play golf, even though I don't look or feel like a golfer that comes to Ping every day? What's that been like?
It's amazing. And if you talk to any of our club fitters, part of why it's such a rewarding job is people come in the door hitting it okay and they leave hitting it better. And whatever that means, if you're a tour player, hitting it better might be 0.1 strokes gain better.
Right.
If you're an average golfer, it might be you gain 20 yards on your drive. If you're an adaptive golfer, you might be starting off with, I can't make contact with a golf ball, and you leave hitting it 150 yards. It's amazing. You know, and I remember very distinctly, we work with a lot of military organizations, and there's one in the UK called Battleback. And we were sponsoring Battleback, and they're people who have been injured in service, you know, so they're active service people. They got injured, they might have lost some limbs. But these are big, strong, athletic people who are now not able to do what they want to do, and they're not able to play sport the way they used to. And so I showed up at a fitting day for this with our director of marketing, and he shares with me, I've never done a club fitting ever. I said, don't worry, it'll be fine. Just stick with me. And we've got a couple of guys who are both double leg amputees, and they cannot make contact with the ball. You know, they're in their 20s, they're fit, they're strong, and they're frustrated because they don't know what it's like to try to play sport on prosthetic legs. And so we help figure out, okay, what's the disconnect here? And in their case, it was this feeling that I'm going to fall forward. If you're on prosthetic legs, you kind of need to be stable. You don't want to feel like you're going to fall over. So all we did was lengthen the clubs, which normally, you know, is a risky thing to do in a club fitting, to go very long in your irons. We put these guys in 2-inch long irons, and suddenly they could swing around their prosthetic legs instead of feeling like they were going to fall forward. And then nailing shots down the fairway, and they're having long drive competitions with each other, and suddenly the competitive spirit is flowing, and they're just like, this is what we want to do. I want to kick his, can I say ass on a podcast? Kick his ass on the course. and that's all it was, right? They wanted that competitive, and it's so cool to see. He went from hitting it 0 yards to 200 yards, and all I did was put a slightly longer golf club in his hands. You know, so for me, it's great to share that with the rest of the team.
Paul, how much of in your experiences have been you know, catering the equipment versus with this example, you're helping figure out the technique. How much is helping them figure out what exact technique could they use? And is that something, you know, that Brian and our team have actively done, helping trying to figure out, you know, if we transpose it to a regular club fitting world, it's that marriage of fitting and teaching, right? But maybe there's a little bit more priority on the teaching side, or so here's some ideas to try.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the essence of a good club fitter is, in my opinion, at least a big part of it is asking good questions, right? Is the person in front of me, what are they trying to do? What's their pain point? Why are they, what's stopping them playing better golf? This is kind of the same thing on steroids of, okay, what do we need to do for you to be comfortable hitting the golf ball? You mentioned kind of doing the fitting backwards and doing some of the things that are normally at the end of the fitting, like grip and length, doing them first. Mm-hmm. It's because it's like, how do we get you swinging comfortably? And once you're swinging comfortably, then we can dial in other things. So yeah, I'd say it's maybe a bit less technique and more like ergonomics is not quite the right word, but you know what I mean? It's asking the questions of what's stopping you being able to swing freely. But it comes back to, and it's just the same for you and me in our daily life here, right, Marty, that asking good questions is 80% of the job.
Yeah. Shane, one thing that came to mind when Paul was talking about Andreas and really working on innovating with him on the paddle design was the use and value of 3D printing. I mean, this is really the ultimate example of being able to leverage 3D printed parts, because with Andreas, I remember we catted up, we did a 3D design of the paddle. Then I remember looking at our 3D printer and seeing all these designs pop out that they could snap together and the right. grip fastens in there. So that was a lot of fun. Paul, what are some other fun designs we've done or attachment methods or things that have been a little more outside the box?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the paddle is a great example of, you know, you're making kind of one of one prototype. Exactly. Although now we found that actually the paddle works for a few more players, and Andreas is coming in next month or in a couple of months to try to redesign it and take some weight out and optimize it, which is cool to be at the optimization side. I think some of the attachments of like, how do you, if you're building a very long club right now, one of the things we're working on is how do you, it's very hard to transport a 66 inch long club. So how do we disassemble that club, you know, in a way that it still feels solid when you put it together? So we're working on some screw attachments like a pool cue to take a club apart and be able to transport it. Mm. We've done some stuff working initially with Jeff, who was the quadruple amputee I mentioned, finding a way to actually get a club to screw directly into his prosthetic, but then have a quick release mechanism. So we made this spring. I think you probably remember it was an intern that worked on that. It's a great little project for a summer intern. It's a spring mechanism that once the club is in, the spring holds it solid and he can swing. But to take that club out, you just have to push it, twist it, and it comes out and you put a different club in. And we've used that for a couple of other players in different ways. And then we're thinking about, well, could that inspire some things in our regular product line? And, you know, I think some of the stuff on our adjustable length putters have kind of taken a bit of inspiration from some of the adaptive. So I think there's a good chance in future some more of these adaptive things will end up in regular clubs.
Marty, you mentioned 3D printing.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask you, I just am so interested in the 3D printing process in terms of golf clubs. How has 3D printing changed your world over the last decade or so, just in terms of seeing a product in hand and actually being able to use what you guys are kind of thinking up in your brain or maybe even on a computer?
Yeah, Paul and I have a lot of experience with 3D printing. And, you know, believe it or not, we had a 3D printer at Ping when I started. So
no
this
way.
Is 20 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of like in the news, it feels like 3D printing was been hot, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago it kind of came on the scene, at least newsworthy, but we've had 3D printers here for over 20 years. And Ping's always been on the cutting edge of kind of investing in that latest and greatest technology. Super valuable and powerful in a lot of different ways. Shane, when you were at the Proving Ground, and we went and toured our manufacturing area, you see a lot of little one-off little components and pieces that are made through the 3D printing process from a manufacturing standpoint. We're talking about making bespoke one-off components that are actually used in products here for the adaptive program. When it comes to mainline product development, it's really helpful to go from, I see something on the computer, I can hit print on the printer, go to lunch, come back half a day later, maybe 4 hours go by, and you have that actual 3D part to look at. Maybe you reshape the driver. Maybe you reshape the irons a little bit. You want to work on the little nuances of how they look and transition. And basically, when you're in the core cycle of designing product, you could look at two iterations in one day. You can print one out overnight when you go home and go home for the night and see it first thing in the morning. You can make a tweak to it, print another one, see another copy in the afternoon. It's really helped accelerate that process. Now, fast forward to today's age, you can 3D print out of a lot of different materials. So, you know, now we're in the age of, you know, metal 3D printing with a lot of different material properties. And that's opened up the door even more, you know, kind of another degree of freedom, so to speak. So we've got a long history with it. We've been able to use it in a lot of different ways. I think that, you know, one of the main things is just to be able to do those one-off things very, very quickly and accelerate that design, that iteration process.
I just find it so interesting that this has, you know, the evolution of just simply designing the golf clubs has gone through this many steps. I mean, you talk about, you know, 20 years ago having this at your disposal, but now being able to do it in so many different ways as quickly as you can. You think about what it's going to look like 10 years from now, where you're going to hit print and it's going to be out in, you know, 30 seconds. I mean, it can only it's only going to get quicker. Paul, for you guys in this space and adaptive, I mean, I can only imagine that the 3D printing, when you have a customer come your way that is in need of something you guys haven't attacked yet, having that as an option makes your job all the easier.
It's a great tool to have in the toolbox. Like Marty said, it's speed. It's if you're making one or 10 of something, it's an amazing way to do it. The dimensional accuracy has got so much better. You know, and we have a whole machine shop here too and can turn around prototypes, cutting metal really quickly. So the more options you have, the more the team can be creative.
Marty, you got anything?
I think we've seen the last couple of years a lot of investment from different organizations. Can you give a little bit of insight into some of the big adaptive tournaments that are taking place, different organizations that's kind of fueled the popularity? We've seen, you know, I think pretty explosive growth in the participation even lately in some of the big events that that you and Brian have been attending.
Yeah, it's been great. There's been tournaments around for a long time. And I remember going to a tournament in Europe in 2010. There was a big sort of cross-disability tournament called, there was the British Open at the time, the British Disabled Open, I think was the name. But just in the last 2 years, like you said, we sponsor a tournament called the US Disabled Golf Championship, which has really grown. There was this year's sponsored by the PGA of America, and they hosted it over in Port St. Lucie, and there were about 100 competitors and some really good players and really good mix. That's been going for a few years. The USGA's got involved. They have the Adaptive Open now. And I think at least a few people who are watching or listening to this podcast probably saw there were some highlights on the Golf Channel, which was great to see on TV. Yeah. Some of these really good players. And then on the European Tour or the DP World Tour, they've had a couple of events. They've got a little mini tour where they play alongside the DP World Tour main event, and they'll have like 12 to 20 adaptive athletes who are playing their competition on the same course at the same time. And it just gives visibility to the events, and some of these athletes are so good. I mean, we're our first, you know, adaptive brand ambassador, staff player, Juan Postigo, is a young Spanish guy. He's scratch player, you know, he's won a couple of those events. They're on, you know, TV quite a bit in Europe, and he does the whole thing swinging on one leg. And it's amazing to watch a guy hitting 300 yard drives on one leg. I'm quite jealous, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I think it's grown a lot.
Yeah, Paul, I had Alex Forey on the Get a Grip podcast a few weeks ago, recapping the US Adaptive Open, and listening to the conversation, and the one thing that Alex was really pushing, and I think the hope for so many people in this space or that are interested in this space, is getting these tournaments full-time on television, you know, getting a chance to be able to watch the US Adaptive Open. I know it's in its second iteration this year and there were highlights on the Golf Channel, but I think the hope for golf fans out there is this eventually will be on television where you can watch, you know, the last couple of rounds on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a very common phrase, right? If you can see it, you can be it. So having representation at the top of the game, having the best players in the world in this, in these events, be on TV is a big deal, because if you see someone like you who's breaking par, you think, well, then I could get out and play. And Steve, who's one of the, Steve Winter is a wheelchair golfer, who's the first guy I talked to on this whole project back in 2006. He said, when it boils down to it, all I want is to be able to suffer golf the same way you suffer golf. I want to be just as annoyed missing a 3-foot putt as you. Is that so much to ask?
Oh, I love that.
We're all just golfers at heart, right? I mean, everybody, no matter what walk of life you're in, you want to get frustrated. You want to hit the shot every now and again that brings you back.
That's it.
Paul, if someone's listening to this podcast and they're interested in getting involved in golf, or maybe there's someone that has a physical disability that they've never really thought that there were golf clubs made for them, how can they go about getting fit or learning about the fitting process with people at Ping?
On ping.com, on our website, there's a fitting section. And in the fitting section, there's an adaptive fitting section that has some examples of what we can do. And it's certainly, you know, you can send us a message through that, through our contact form, and it'll get to Brian, our adaptive fitting coordinator, or myself. Certainly, if anyone wants to send me a note on social media, it's PaulWood79 on Twitter or X or wherever we are these days on these things. I would love to chat to people, but you know, through the website is probably the easiest. And then, you know, if you're in the States, there's a whole bunch of organizations. Like I said, the U.S. Disabled Golf Association, there's the One Arm Golf Association, there's the Seated Golfers Association. So just doing a bit of a Google search, you can kind of pick up all kinds of great organizations, probably local to your area.
Paul, I'll add on there too. You could also go to our Find a Fitter tool on ping.com and filter by our accounts that have our adaptive fitting bag. So you might be able to find one of our Ping accounts very close to you, as we have a good mix of those spread throughout the country. This is another option.
That's a great point. There's about a dozen accounts that have the equipment that are sort of certified as our adaptive accounts. But I would also say, just go to your local account.
Yep.
And we have a loaner bag that we can send to any of our accounts. If they have an interest in doing a fitting and they don't have the right tools, we can send the tools to help any of our accounts do a fitting.
Paul, what's the 79 on the end of your Twitter handle? Is that like your low score, or what are we talking about here? Were you the 79th Paul Wood? Like, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, sadly, my birth year, that kind of shows my age a little
okay,
bit.
Like maybe okay.
I prefer it to be my average golf score, but never mind.
I have seen people throw the 59 up there before when they've been lucky enough to break 60, but I like the idea of 79 on there. Paul, it's so wild to think, you know, you talk about the first email and, you know, getting a chance to chat with people that now obviously are involved in golf, and now having a fitter or a person at Ping that's sole job is this. How busy is Brian? Like, how often is Brian going about fittings on a week-to-week basis?
You know, funnily enough, I asked him that yesterday, because when we got permission to bring him down to our area, there was a bit of, you know, is this going to be a full-time job? We'll call it 50-50. You could do adaptive fitting and some other stuff. And I asked him, how busy are you? He said, it's 90% adaptive.
Wow.
He's going to events. He's doing fittings here. He's setting up fittings at, you know, at our accounts. He's working on special one-offs. We're supporting an amputee conference where it's actually someone outside of Ping who's invented a way to attach a golf club to someone's prosthetic for someone who's a double arm amputee, and we're supporting that. He's doing all kinds of things. It's wonderful. It's a great example of I think we're at that point where momentum is, you know, people have seen I could do this, and I want to come and get the best equipment I can. I want to get out there and beat my friends. It's great.
Paul, can you tell the story about the fella from England that was 7'8" and got fit at Ping? I loved reading about that.
It's really fun. So this was Britain's tallest man. And, you know, so it's an adaptive fitting because he's literally off our chart. So I remember our team kind of said, hey, could you give him advice? You know, I wasn't able to get over there for the fitting, but I said, well, okay, at least get his height and wrist to floor, and let's see what his hand size and, you know, the basics, and let's see where we are. And he was off our color code chart. He was too tall, and his wrist was to floor was too. So we had to kind of go back and go, okay, if we were to extend the chart, what would that look like? So we made a bigger version of our color code chart, to kind of go, okay, what's a decent length recommendation and color code recommendation? So we now have this expanded version of our color code chart that he inspired. And so we were able to build some clubs ahead of time. And when you go really long, you have to watch out for things getting too heavy. So we did a few things just to try to lighten things up. When you're playing a 4-inch over length club, you got to take some weight out of that head. And that was the biggest challenge. And we built him a belly putter that for him was a normal putter. So it was a 41-inch, you know, what now would be an arm lock. That was his normal length putter. It was a fun project.
Marty, you know, single linked irons have become a popular thing in the sport. I mean, I think Bryson is a big part of that. And then obviously a lot of companies have kind of leaned into the idea of an entire bag being the same length iron. When you have someone come through the fitting process that is extremely tall and you've kind of got to mess around with weight, I can only imagine that helps you guys when you want to dive into something like a single length iron project or trying to fit even, you know, a professional golfer for something like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, when single length irons kind of became a thing in the industry for the everyday golfer, oh, this sounds like a good idea. We kind of went in and I went to Paul and he said, well, we've done those quite a bit for blind golfers because you don't want to have to adjust to where the ground is or the low point is and have that change on all your clubs. So Paul was like, well, we've actually done this quite a bit. It works really good for blind golfers. I was like, oh, yeah, that's a great point. And then, you know, Paul and I were just talking earlier today about, you know, some things we've learned through adaptive that have kind of given us a little clues or hints. It's forced us to be more creative, to think differently, that has inspired some things that have made their way into our mainline product. You know, I think adjustable length putters was another really good example where, you know, it's mutually beneficial on the adaptive side to your everyday golfer. So this has been a very positive sum initiative for us that's allowed us to stress our creativity and, you know, help a lot of folks along the way. And also, I think your everyday golfer is benefiting from the fact that we're being challenged by this to push the envelope in different ways.
Marty, I still have an adjustable putter. This has to be 15-year-old Scottsdale putter that when I'm really struggling, man, I go back to it. It's in the bag in my golf closet right now. And when I'm missing everything, that's my bad boy I go to. And I mean, I still have the little tool and it occasionally gets itself back in the bag.
Got a little weight in that collet right there that's moving that thing up and down. That's been super helpful on the adaptive side. We use that all the time. A ball?
It's so cool.
Sure. That's like the perfect fitting putter, right? And we've built some with that exact thing on wedges so we can dial in wedge length for players. It's super helpful for the adaptive project.
Well, Paul, very, very interesting subject. We really appreciate the time. And, you know, I mean, just it's I'd say it's encouraging. It's exciting to hear about these stories. You know, we love throwing the term around grow the game. And it's been, you know, it's been worn out over the last few years. This is truly growing the love of the game because it's allowing people to get involved in a sport when, you know, sport is something they might not have believed was going to be in their cards going forward. So kudos to you and the crew. Very, very cool to hear these stories. And if you could just, Marty, if you could remind people where they could go to kind of read stories or check out where they might be able to get fit.
Yeah, definitely. Go to ping.com, go up into the fitting section. You'll be able to read some really cool stories. You'll be able to read all about our adaptive program, some really cool stories, and then go to that find a fit tool and filter by adaptive fitting bag, and you'll be able to find one of those accounts in your area. And as Paul said, that loaner program is awesome. You go to any Ping account and express interest in this, and we will help get that bag to the account if you can't come to us here in Phoenix and be able to provide you with those tools. So a lot of fun, as Paul said, a lot of ways to get a hold of us and get access to this program.
So cool. Marty, appreciate the time. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. This is the Ping Proving Grounds podcast.